I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Jake Klang, an M&A partner at Wachtell Lipton in New York. Jake, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, David. I'm a big fan of your podcast.
So we're going to talk today about your career path, your decision to become a lawyer, what your associate years were like, and handling that transition from young associate to more mid-level associate to senior associate and then partner. And then finally, how becoming a partner changes your perspective on your career and then also how you balance your career with your life outside of work. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to become a lawyer.
Sure. So in one sense, I've probably been exposed to corporate law and M&A in particular longer than most of the people you have on this podcast. My dad and stepmom both practiced their entire careers as M&A lawyers until retiring a few years ago. But while I had some exposure to the world of corporate law growing up, it's not exactly like, well, every other kid, wanted to be a professional athlete or an astronaut. I dreamed of becoming a corporate lawyer when I was a young boy. I came to this work somewhat indirectly, probably not unlike a lot of other corporate M&A lawyers. I was a math econ major in college. I was always good with numbers. And originally I thought I might go into a career in economics or in finance. I took a law and economics class in college, and that first got me interested in the impact the law could have on economic ordering and financial transactions. And I spent the summer before my senior year of college working in the M&A group at what at that time was Merrill Lynch. It was a great job. It was a great experience overall, but more so than the financial modeling assignments, I found the most interesting project I worked on was putting together a defensive profile analysis for a company that was the target of a hostile bid. And I realized that what I was doing was really more legal work than investment banking work. I was analyzing the company's charter, its bylaws, assessing its vulnerabilities and defenses. And that's really what turned me on to law school.
And did you enjoy that analysis, reading the charter, the bylaws? Did you enjoy that analysis more than the financial analysis that would have done essentially as an analyst?
I did. I found it was less of a formulaic exercise and it required you to sort of think deeply. And it combined reading comprehension, but also analysis and logic and thinking through kind of sequencing how a hostile approach could happen under that particular company's governing documents. And that's really what turned me on to wanting to go to law school rather than wanted to become an investment banker. And I ended up at Yale, which was an amazing place to study law. I gravitated towards more of the commercial law and econ oriented classes, which was not really the norm at Yale. And I was able to take a couple of M&A classes taught by practitioners. One was taught by Eric Robinson, who was a Wachtell partner. And that really got me interested in the practice of corporate law. And I got a job here at Wachtell as a summer associate. Came back after law school, and other than a one-year clerkship, I've been here ever since.
And so how did having parents who were M&A lawyers, how did that help prepare you for the job? And then how was that almost irrelevant to your career?
Yeah, other lawyers who know my parents will sometimes jokingly ask whether growing up we like sat around the dinner table talking about Revlon duties or MAE clauses. And obviously that's ridiculous. I mean, we only did that maybe a couple of nights a week at most, but seriously, that's not what it was like growing up. But I definitely did pick up a few things over the years through osmosis. I would say it gave me at least a little bit of a sense for what the life of an M&A lawyer was like. So the long hours weren't a surprise to me. I had seen that as a kid, but it also gave me a lens into the interpersonal and social aspects of the job. Growing up and still to this day, some of our closest family friends were my dad's partners. Some of them were like aunts and uncles to me. I know that several of them personally. And in my own career, among the most rewarding parts of the job have been that interpersonal element and the relationships you build with colleagues and clients over the years and over the course of multiple transactions. And these days, it's less common than it used to be to have in-person negotiations, but it still happens. And I think post-COVID, it's making a comeback. I just represented the PGA Tour, took an investment from the Strategic Sports Group, and we negotiated that deal in a conference room, working around the clock for weeks, hammering out the terms of the deal. And those types of experiences, while they can be physically exhausting, they're really, in my view, the most rewarding parts of being a corporate lawyer. And it's a chance to connect with coworkers and clients and really build relationships. But what having M&A parents didn't prepare me for was the actual work of being an M&A lawyer, and particularly as a young associate. When it comes to figuring out how to really do this job, it's something I think you have to pick up on your own by doing it yourself, putting in the work, taking the time to obsess over the documents, learning from your mentors. And I was really lucky to have had amazing mentors over my career at Wachtell.
But it sounds like even when you were a summer analyst at Merrill, you enjoyed that. And you must have realized pretty quickly, even as a summer associate at Wachtell in your first year as associate, that you liked this and you were good at it.
Yeah, I did. But, you know, it's an adjustment. I mean, nobody comes into this job knowing how to do it. And you work hard and you look for opportunities to grow and develop. And that's how you become better and better. With each deal, you apply what you learned on the last one. But I was always interested in it. But yeah, it's not like having that M&A influence, you know, made me somehow prepared for being a first year associate. It was definitely trial by fire.
And then talk a little bit about your clerkship. So you were an associate for a year at Wachtell, and then you did a clerkship, and then you came back to continue your practice at Wachtell. So talk about that transition and how the clerkship, even though it's obviously a litigation setting, you know, really helped you as a corporate.
Yeah, I applied to clerkships my third year of law school, and I got the job for a year after graduation. So almost exactly a year into my time at Wachtell, just as I was starting to get my bearings and figure things out, I had to pivot. And as you said, clerkships are much more about legal research and writing memos than the practice of corporate law is. I mean, I don't think I opened Westlaw in the year for my clerkship, and I definitely haven't opened it in the year since. So at the time, I worried that change was going to be a little disruptive, but it turned out to be a phenomenal experience. And summer associates here often ask me whether the clerkship was worthwhile, even for a corporate lawyer. And I always tell them, it depends on the judge you work for, but for me, it was absolutely worth it. And I know a lot of our corporate partners at the firm had similar experiences. As a young lawyer, it allowed me to hone my analytical skills and learn to make legal judgments and give concrete advice to a client. I clerked for a guy named Dennis Jacobs, who is the chief judge of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York. He's a great guy, a great mentor. He was a former law firm partner himself, and he ran his chambers sort of like a small law firm. For every case a clerk was assigned, he would ask for a memo with your analysis of the case, and he'd ask you to make a specific recommendation whether to affirm, reverse, or vacate the lower court decision. And then you'd have to get into a room with him and defend your recommendation orally. And sometimes he'd agree with you, sometimes he wouldn't, but it forced you to make a judgment, to give a recommendation, and then to stand behind it. It was different than law school, where you could just kind of issue spot your way to a good grade by arguing every side of every issue and never really having to make a call. It was a different context, but learning how to crystallize issues and give definitive advice, make a recommendation to your client, that's exactly what I do as a corporate lawyer every day. It's what our clients hire us to do. So I think I came back from the clerkship a year older, but a much more mature lawyer with greater confidence and experience making those types of judgment calls and giving advice to clients.
Talk about the difference between how you would read a case as a clerk and how you read a case, again, in a litigation context, and how you read cases that come down from the Court of Chancery in Delaware that, you know, you're going to have to apply as a corporate lawyer. What are the similarities and what are the differences?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, as a clerk, you get briefs from both sides, right? And so you do independent research, but you're also reading two competing briefs, you know, and you're then supplementing that with your own independent research and analysis, and you're making a call as to what decision is. That was also an appellate court that I clerked on, right? The Chancery Court is not an appellate court. It's essentially a trial court, a court of equity. And when you read a Chancery Court opinion, I'm sure there are litigators who go and read the briefs, but when I read a Chancery Court opinion, I usually read the opinions. So you don't have the benefit of both sides. And the Chancery Court is writing to practitioners in a way that I think federal appellate courts aren't in the same way. We had a much broader range of cases, you know, rather than sort of singularly focused on Delaware corporate cases. And so as a result, I think when you read a Delaware opinion, they tend to be longer. There's a lot of footnotes and there's a lot of what we might consider dicta, you know, that's aimed at kind of giving practitioners and future transactional parties insight into how the court may think about future issues that may not be before the court today. I think that's a little different than the way federal appellate courts tend to consider cases.
You mentioned that as a clerk, the judge you work for is analogous to the partner you're working for as an associate in a law firm, and to some extent is the client. As a younger associate, to what extent is your client really the partner you're working for more than ultimately the company or party you're advising? Because the partner's the one you're interacting with, especially as a younger associate.
It's a good question. I think as a younger associate, particularly at Wachtell, you could end up wearing a lot of different hats. There are deals where you may be functioning with a lot of autonomy on certain matters. There are deals where you'll be interfacing directly with clients and leading calls, even at a young age. And there are deals where you might be more behind the scenes and supporting a partner. M&A is like the fundamental team sport. That's what makes it fun, right? We put together teams that span different practice groups. We have lawyers of different seniority levels. And I think what's important as an associate is that you become an indispensable part of whatever team you're on. So I wouldn't view it so much as trying to satisfy the partner as if they were a client. I think it's more about fulfilling a key role on a team and being a team player. But it's also important as a young associate, especially, not to have tunnel vision, not to focus just on the narrow task you've been asked to undertake. For corporate lawyers, I think being integrated with all aspects of the deal, understanding what the other lawyers and the team are doing, that's key to delivering effective commercial advice to clients and to growing as an associate. And I also think it's important as an associate to find your own voice and be confident in your positions. So if you disagree with a partner on something, you should feel comfortable telling them. You may bring something to the partner's attention that they hadn't thought of, or the partner may be able to explain to you why your reasoning might have been wrong. But either way, you walk away a better lawyer for it. Personally, I like it when associates disagree with me on something. It shows they're capable of thinking critically and independently. And our associates are really smart. A lot of times they're right.
Early in your career, was there a deal that was pivotal for you? And also, how long did it take you to get a sense, not just of your role, but of the broader team and what people in other roles were doing?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's hard to pick one because I think I've developed as a lawyer with every deal I've done. And part of what makes the job exciting is each deal is different than the one before and it raises new issues you haven't thought about. And then you learn from that deal and you get to apply that on the next one. But early in my career, one deal that was important in my growth was a merger of equals between Provident New York Bancorp and Sterling Bancorp, which I worked on right after coming back from the clerkship. So I was technically a third year associate, but in terms of experience as an M&A lawyer, I only had 1 year under my belt, I think. And I was dealing with my counterpart, who was an eighth year associate at a major law firm, who made partner during the course of the deal. And it was kind of trial by fire. I was given the chance to run point drafting the merger agreement and negotiating directly with this partner on the other side. And I held my own. I mean, I'm sure if I look back at that agreement today, I'd find some things I would have done differently, but it was a protective contract and the deal was a real success. And that was, I think, the first time when I felt like I could do this job and maybe make this my career. And it was really a function of the Wachtell partner on the deal, Matt Guest, who's been a great mentor of mine, giving me that opportunity, having confidence in me and being willing to give me the responsibility and the leeway to take on that role, even as a very young lawyer. And it wasn't a huge transaction, but I think it was an important one in my early development. One piece of advice I always give to younger associates is if you get the chance to work on a smaller deal as the lead associate, you should jump on it. That's the best way to cut your teeth at this job. And as any M&A lawyer will tell you, smaller deals tend to be more complicated anyway, and you learn more from them. And small deals also often lead to big deals down the road. If you fast forward about a decade after that one, I led the $10 billion merger of equals between Webster Financial and Sterling. So it kind of came full circle when I was a partner.
Talk about, now that you're a partner, the balance between giving, especially a younger associate, the freedom to run with the situation and knowing when and how to step in if you feel that person needs some support.
Yeah, I think that it's something you have to feel your way through, and you take different approaches to different deals, you know, depending on the level of complexity and the team that you have around you. But I try to give associates as many opportunities as I can to draft agreements, to negotiate agreements, to be on the phone with clients, running calls. And obviously I'm there with them and I'm looking at everything, but that's really how you grow in this job, is by giving the chance to do it. And people gave me those chances early on in my career, and I think it made a huge difference in my development. So I try to pay it forward.
You talked about working across from a senior associate on one of your early deals. What is it like to be an associate that last year or two before making partner, you know, which I would assume is really stressful because you feel like there's a spotlight on you all the time?
Yeah, they were really busy and tough years, but also years of incredible growth for me as a lawyer. And I've heard people say that the litmus test for whether you're ready to be a partner is whether you're already functioning like a partner in your last year or two as an associate. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. For me, one of the tests that stands out came when I was a seventh year associate. Global Payments asked us to represent them on a $1 billion acquisition of a company called the Active Network. Ed Hurley, he was the co-chairman of our firm and someone who's been an incredible mentor to me over the years, called me and asked if I could basically run with it. And I had worked with Global Payments since I was a second or third year associate and developed a relationship with general counsel, who was a great lawyer and a fantastic guy. So it was a particularly exciting opportunity, but also a little bit daunting. And it was a complicated deal and a tough negotiation. We got the deal signed in about 4 weeks. It was a fast-paced deal, but we got it done and well. And there's a crazy personal story here. In the middle of the deal, my dad was at a Yankees game and he was looking at his BlackBerry, reading a work email. I think he was one of the handful of people at that time still carrying a BlackBerry around, although I confess I was with another. And I guess he had good seats because he got hit in the head with an Aaron Judge line drive foul ball. And this was before all the stadiums put in, you know, protective netting. And he got hit right above his eye. And had he not been reading emails, it could have been much worse, could have been hit in the eye. So it's a rare example of M&A literally saving a life. But I had to balance negotiating the deal while also being there for my family and spending time in the ER with my dad while they stitched up his forehead. But we all got through it. The deal got done. His head looks good, or at least it looks as good as it did before the accident.
Now that you're a partner, how you evaluate when you think an associate is really ready to be a partner and has the ability to do that job really well?
I think it's a combination of factors. You look for confidence and presence, the ability to give your opinion to a client and to stand behind it and defend it forcefully. I go back to the clerkship. I mean, I really think it's some of the same skills that I developed there, which is giving strong, confident advice and being able to back it up. I think that's one element. Another element is you need reps. I mean, you have to have experience doing deals to become good at doing deals. Now, again, nobody's born knowing how to do this job. And so you have to have some experience under your belt and a level of fluency with what the issues are that matter for clients and what the kind of range of potential outcomes is. And the only way to do that is through trial and error. And then, you know, eventually you get it right. So that's kind of how I assess. But again, I'm of the view that, you know, as soon as I see somebody who's ready to take on that role, they should have an opportunity to take it on.
How do you teach people to have that presence, kind of the more intangible softer skill part of the role?
I think a big part of it, David, it's the way I learned, is by watching other people do it. And you learn through example and through osmosis and being around it. And that's why going back to the experience of negotiating deals in person, in conference rooms, when you're kind of locked in a room together, there's no substitute for that in my experience, both in terms of connecting with clients, but also from an associate development perspective. You know, just watching a more experienced lawyer do this job, that I think is the best way for a younger lawyer to learn, to sit in on conference calls, to be on Zoom calls, and to watch. And from that, you develop your own voice and your own style, but you have examples that you can learn from and cobble together to come up with your own style.
Talk about deals you've done as a partner that have been particularly memorable for you or that you feel have been professional milestones.
Yeah, one that I did when I made partner was representing Pfizer in its consumer healthcare joint venture with GSK. So that started when I was a eighth year associate, and it was really the culmination of over a year of work on various strategic alternatives for the business. The joint venture, in the end, created the largest OTC healthcare business globally. And it was just an incredibly difficult and complicated cross-border JV. I was dealing with really good senior lawyers with a lot more experience than me on the other side. That's been particularly rewarding because I've continued to represent Pfizer related to its interest in that business for 6 or 7 years since that deal, including when the joint venture went public a little over a year ago, in the spinoff of what's now Haleon, which is a $36 billion spinoff at the time. So that was one. You know, another, I mentioned Global Payments. They've been a phenomenal client. They're really sophisticated. They do a ton of deals. And I've been able to represent them over the years in basically all of their major M&A, starting from when I was an associate and then through to this day as a partner. They did about a 20 plus billion dollar acquisition of a company called Thesis when I was a first year partner, which I led. And then in 2022, I think I worked on like half a dozen deals for them alone. And there was one weekend over the summer, I remember, when we signed three distinct $1 billion plus transactions for Global Payments on the same day. And then like 4 days later, I had another client sign a completely unrelated $4 billion deal. So that was one of those weeks when you don't know if you're going to make it through to the other side, but then you always do. So those stand out. But, you know, I've had a really busy period the last couple of years. I've been lucky to get a lot of great experience as a partner.
What changes when you make partner, and how do you think about your career different?
I think the main change is you approach transactions and client relationships from a slightly different vantage point and perspective as a partner. When you're an associate, you're often living a little bit week by week or month by month, and you go from one project to the next. And hopefully over the course of your career as an associate, you're developing repeat clients and building relationships. As a partner, you're still super focused on the details of each transaction. You have to be in the weeds, in my view, to be an effective lawyer, but you also have a broader lens. You're focused on how each particular transaction fits into your client's overall objectives, what the issues are that really matter to your clients commercially. And you become more focused on the client relationship holistically and the long-term arc of that relationship. When I look back on the last couple of years, I've done a lot more juggling of multiple deals at one time and had a greater number of repeat transactions for clients than I did as an associate. I just mentioned the Global Payments relationship being a good example of that. So I'd say it's the main change is you keep your focus while managing multiple different deals at once, often for the same client. That's kind of a skill you hone as a partner. And then I think another thing that changes as a partner is you become more directly responsible, as we were talking about, for the development of the associates that you work with and making sure they're getting good work and opportunities to grow and develop. My mentors gave me those opportunities early on in my career, and I think that's something that's really important for partners to give their associates.
Talk about how you get comfortable as a young partner with juggling maybe more transactions and recognizing that your role on the transactions probably to some extent shifts, and that you still have to be really familiar with the details, but you can't be as familiar with certain details as, say, the third year associate. So how do you figure out when to parachute in and when to not parachute in?
I think different partners probably approach that differently, and you sort of have to find your own comfort zone. I probably err on the side of being more involved in everything that's going on in the deal. I think that gives me a greater ability to then know when I can give associates room to do their own thing and run with something by understanding exactly what it is that they're running with. But, you know, I think that the answer is the more you do this job and the more experience you have under your belt, the better sense you have for quickly identifying in a deal what the 10 most important issues are and what the issues are that are really going to matter to your client commercially. And you develop an ability to crystallize those and focus on them. And you don't lose sight of the trees, right? You still need to navigate the trees, but I think you have a greater ability to sort of look at the forest and pick out the things that are really going to be general counsel, CEO, board level issues, and to give practical commercial advice to your clients. That's the way I think about it.
And then finally, how does making partner affect your mindset about your life outside of work? Because you know, once you make partner, you realize there's a very good chance you're going to be doing this job for the next 30 years.
Yeah, it's a great question. For me, a bigger change, frankly, than making partner came 3 years after I made partner, when my wife, Allie, gave birth to our twins, Evan and Reese, who are now a little over two, and they're tons of fun, a total joy. Their language has exploded, actually, over the last couple of weeks, and they're now like little parrots, which is great and hilarious, but you have to really be careful with what you say around them. But they're a lot of work. And another parent of twins gave me the advice early on that you have to just embrace the chaos. And that's totally right. I mean, it's definitely been an adjustment to be a partner, but then to be a partner with twin infants and then toddlers. I've shifted my work hours a bit. I try to have dinner with them, put them to bed whenever I can. And in the mornings and on weekends, I try to spend as much time with them as I can. One of their favorite phrases they've picked up is "no more work, daddy." And when you hear that, like, that's it. You just have to stop working. It's impossible to keep working after they say that. But it's been a total game changer for me to become a parent, and I'm definitely still learning. But when I think back on maybe the most important lesson I learned from my own dad and my stepmom, to bring it back to your earlier question, it's that you can be a great lawyer and a great parent at the same time. And no matter how busy they were at board meetings or on client calls when I was a kid, they would always have time for me. And even though they worked incredibly hard and had great careers, success didn't come at the expense of being a great parent. And when I think across my mentors over the years, that's a common theme. Those who are parents are all great parents first and great lawyers second. So that's what I'm striving for more than anything as a partner and now a dad.
Jake, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
For Drinks with the Deal, I'm David Marcus.